coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Welcome back, nerds. Oh, hey, it's,
Nerds! Nerds!
Playing with some new ideas. I'm playing with some new ideas for the show. This is,
don't,
of course...
Don't imitate Ogre.
It's... you need a keytar for this. I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the Jedi Cole Houston. Jedi Cole, are you out there?
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you are. I would be remiss if you weren't, because you were just there. I know it's close to Halloween, but don't go pulling that shit on me right now. We're going to cover that later. So, issue 250 just came out. Huge milestone for us. We felt really good about it. And we're gonna pull back the curtain a little bit. This is a brilliant topic that we have tonight. And that brilliant topic that we have tonight, because Cole is always so precognitiently prescient, we had talked, Cole and I had talked prior to issue 250 about fully rebooting Hey Kids Comics. Now, and by that we mean renumbering all the things that we've said on this show in the prior 250 issues that we said we hated. We were talking about going back in and doing.
We were trying to figure out a way to polybag the show.
Well, and I've got, in my research today, when we go back to the cash grab, in my research today, I found a brand new cash grab that I don't think I was aware of that's pretty amazing. I'm gonna hold that for later. But we were talking, and we decided against that. You know, we've got a lot of history. We love you guys. We don't want to feel like we're taking anything away. There's no multiple Earth continuity that we have to smash into one, or...
No, we don't have to worry about the beardless mirror universe Jedi Cole.
Both of us. Oh, that's so weird. Our mirror universe doubles would, our doppelgangers would be clean shorn, like a dolphin. I can't deal with dolphin people. I don't.
It's bad enough.
That's Terry Pratchett.
The dolphin people roam the earth as it is. Then
don't get me started on aquatic ape theory again. We covered that at Alcon a couple of years ago with that guy that I'm still pretty sure is either A, from the future, or B, works for some secret government organization that we're not supposed to know about that came in to check up on us during the Figment's panel. Just
I think they tend to sneak in to just, you know, make sure that the wires are in place and the, you know,
well,
the mics.
Make sure
are...
we weren't too close to the truth, I think.
Yeah.
Is really what it
probably was thumbing the trigger on a pistol.
He had like a Walther
slowly,
PPK.
Yeah, just kind of slowly. Okay.
All right, everything's okay
for now.
For next year, but yeah. So Cole came up with the idea to do a show in 251 about reboots. So I thought that was brilliant, Cole. Well done, man.
It seemed only natural and kind of odd to me that after 250 issues of the show, we have never – we've talked about retconning and other gimmicks, but we never talked really heavily about the outright reboot, which is basically to say kiss everything you knew goodbye. We're starting over. We're going to tear this down to the foundation, to the – what is
it? Take it to the studs.
That's right. It's like the what is it, the show about houses where they tear down everything with the walls and like House Bones or something
British
like that.
British Bake Off, yeah.
Oh, British Bake Off, yeah, that's right.
Oh no, that was just Mary Berry's, just all bones.
Oh,
she's just
yeah.
Horrifying load bearing bakery. awful. No, yeah, this is awesome because we have. We have favorites and we have some that were just like, good God, why did you make this thing? Who was this for? Is there anyone that this was for? But
precisely. And the idea behind the reboot is fairly solid. One of the ones we're going to touch on heavily is the Crisis on Infinite Earths, of course, Brandon. Because it was the first Universal reboot. And at the time, I was not following DC at all. That literally got me over into the DC camp from Marvel.
How could you?
That's
the problem we're running into now. It's like, how could you? It's like reading X-Men in the 90s, or now, for that matter.
Star Wars, there wasn't anything else I was really following. And then I got hooked on, I think it was the Murder World cover of X-Men that got me.
God.
And so I was following the Uncanny X-Men for a while. And, you know, the thing about it was, I just really didn't have a lot of use for anything at DC. And then my friend Steve, who's been on the show often, said, hey, check out this title. You're going to – this will be your entree, as it were. And the thing is that the Crisis was – I would later find out because it was written about extensively while it was going on. And I would find out that it was incredibly necessary.
Yeah.
If you've been with the DCU all your life, there was probably a part of you that recognized how convoluted and completely just full of a rich history that didn't always mesh.
Yeah, it was a slog to figure out anything. Like, how many, like Robin being in high school for 50 years.
Exactly. Or the fact that, you know, as characters aged out, they had to sort of separate.
Right.
Because characters got better. Green Lantern was less mystical, more sci-fi. Superman was less stout. You know, he stopped being like a 1920s bodybuilder and became more like a superhero champion type.
Herculean body mold.
And, you know, more of the classical Greek hero mold, if you will. So what do you do with all the leftover heroes? What do you do with, like, Hubcap Flash or... all, you know... So you remand them, even though they were first, they get to be on Earth 2.
Right. Well, let's just stick them on Earth 2.
Yeah.
But what about
into that. The thing about it was, this was a reboot that was necessary to move forward. They needed to have a way to use the entire corral of characters without having to dimension jump.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that gets tiresome after a while, and you know... You kind of want to be able to have some of your acquisitions, like Charlton and Fawcett Publications acquisitions, interact with your own corral. But then the idea of the reboot really has just crept in heavily over the decades.
Well, we always talk about comics by editorial mandate, and a lot of it is that, right? Like, okay, so it took how long before DC rebooted the DC Universe with Crisis on Infinite Earths? And by the way, if you haven't picked it up...
This was their 50th anniversary.
Right. So if you haven't picked it up, it's the two names that you will epitomize with this show, Wolfman and Perez, just beyond the point that it was a necessary reimagining of a universe, it's a kick-ass 12 issues of comic books, man. Like, it's cool. You get panels with everybody you've ever wanted in a DC universe in one panel. It's right there for you.
It has some of the best group shots of heroes and villains and characters you haven't seen before. And it brought in everybody. And it was a wonderful, at the time, gateway into the DCU.
Right.
It's lost a lot of that today because of the very thing that we're talking about. This was supposed to be the sweeping changes that would forever reset the DC universe.
Well, but I think
until the next set of sweeping changes that would forever reset the DC Universe. And that's rather what we want to talk about here as well.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And the thing about that is, it's like when we talk about technology, right? If we're talking about technology, there is a curve on a graph that as time goes on, it exponentially climbs up quicker and quicker and quicker to the point where what they call the technological singularity, when robots start making robots and we're all fucked. But beyond that, I'm using this as a metaphor. I could do 8 hours on that topic, but I'm not going to do it.
We'll get you a new show.
Get me a different show for that. Just put me on a show with, I don't know, Eddie, and I'll just make him talk to me about it for 8 hours. But comics are the same thing, right? Like, okay, so you had your reboot. It was the 50th anniversary. Now we need another reboot 20 years later or 15 years later, you know, with Zero Hour. Now we need another reboot 7 years later. Now we need one 5 years later. Now we need one 2 years later because they keep stacking more
now
shit.
We need annual reboots.
Right. Oh, well, this guy was cool. Let's bring him in. You know, this guy was cool. Let's bring him in. I mean, the thing about Crisis on Infinite Earths was they made giant changes that shocked not only their fan base, but the industry in this thing that supposedly were not going to change for a very long time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this was like the most shocking deaths oftentimes. And it was a good way to weed out. I mean, sometimes it's painfully obvious, be it a reboot or just a, cross title storyline.
What?
Yeah, what? Where, you know, you'll kill off a character that nobody cares about.
Right.
And it's painfully obvious. I wasn't that familiar, but at the time, the Teen Titans had a character called Cole, K-O-L-E, and her power was to weave crystal out of thin air.
Okay.
Which is the most questionable, apart from, you know, the craft fair circuit.
Well, that's a god-level power.
In her scenes in Crisis, she's like making slides of Waterford to help people out of burning buildings and stuff, and ultimately she gets swallowed up by the Great White Effect. Or no, sorry, that's the play, The Skin of Her Teeth. But
I was going to say, is she on retainer from the Queen?
So yeah, she was completely excised from the DCU, along with a lot of other characters. And one of the things that was really fascinating in illustrating all of these different worlds, like they got rid of the, I think it was like Earthsea or something like that, which was the home of the, the crime syndicate.
Yes, Power Ring and yeah.
Johnny Quick and Owlman and Ultraman and
Power Woman
or something like that, but. And Lex Luthor, I don't know if this existed beforehand, but they posited Lex Luthor was that world's only hero, which I thought was a brilliant stroke there. They all, to a man, get wiped out. Their entire Earth is destroyed. Of course, we'll get into it later. Things like that don't last forever.
Right.
But what you did get was not only existing worlds being wiped out, where fans who'd been around for a while, there was this implicit history with a lot of these characters, that going in, it's very approachable. You don't have to have been reading DC Comics for 5 decades to get in this,
right?
Which is Marv Wolfman at the height of his powers. But you also have this – one of the things that's really cool is you visit this one Earth that was premiered and ended in the Crisis.
That's awesome.
And from that world is plucked a single character that I believe is around to this day. I'm not certain about that. But
which character is it? Do you remember?
Lady Quark.
Yeah, I think she is still around.
I seem to think that she had survived every reboot that followed. But she was of a kind of family of heroes on her world. And the king and the princess, whose, you know, plant manipulation powers don't do a world of good against giant walls of death.
No, no, they don't. And the thing about Crisis, and
spoiler alert if you haven't read Crisis.
Spoiler alert if you haven't read a 30-year-old comic book. The thing about Crisis and the reboots that we're going to talk about are that certain reboots are necessary. They're absolutely necessary. This one, the idea and the reason that it's so good, right? The reason that you can read this thing and be completely invested is that it was done, and I believe this wholeheartedly, it's been probably 10 years since I've read Crisis, I need to reread it, is that it's done for the fans.
Oh, very much so.
It's done to make it easier for you to pick up a book and know where you stand. Now, again, now it's, you know, they've had to now do Rebirth, which is, you know, they've literally been through, since the first Crisis, so Crisis on Infinite Earths, Infinite Crisis, Final Crisis, Zero Hour, Flashpoint, which led to New 52, and now we're into Rebirth. That's a complete reworking. That's not a soft reboot. That's not a, you know, a retelling. That's not a, that's a soft reboot.
Absolutely. And one of the things that DC, yeah, that DC suffers from, sadly, is rebooting to either almost like, oh, we made a mistake.
Right.
Barry Allen stayed where he was for longer than expected.
That's true.
I don't think anyone expected the kind of longevity that his earth-shattering fate put forth. However, mistakes were made in the DC universe, like Barbara Gordon being shot by the Joker and paralyzed.
Yes. Yes.
We can't have that. That can't play for... I mean, you know, Oracle's all well and good if you're publishing Birds of Prey Volume 1, 2, 3, or 4. But after a while, we need the original Batgirl back on her feet.
Well, sure. You can't tell a compelling story.
No, and, you know, Batman can have his back broken, and Batgirl can get shot through the spine, and one gets to walk again. The other's like, well, sorry, hon.
That's a whole other show.
And then, you know, the specter of Alan Moore's disdain fades enough where they're complete. We've gone from just blind, abject adoration that cost us the DC Direct Watchmen action figure line. Back when Watchmen, I think, had turned 20 or 20, I guess it was 20 years old at the time. And Alan Moore wanted nothing to do with the reprints and the celebration and the FUD. So, like, okay, we won't have a celebration at all.
Right.
Under the pretense, it wouldn't be a celebration without him. The big BS there was he didn't want your money, your blood money. He didn't want to sign off on something he didn't personally care about. He was done.
Right.
And the cancellation of the celebration was little more than a big F you. Right back at you, buddy. Alan Moore gave them the finger. They gave him the finger right back. And he didn't care, but we all paid the price.
Right, right.
It was DC at the height of hubris. So, fast forward another decade, Watchmen's getting kind of long in the tooth. We stop caring. You know, this is ours, bought and paid for. We got a Pete's Dragon bill of sale on this thing, yeah, and we're going to run it through the mill.
Why you gotta go back to Pete's Dragon again?
It's been a long time. Maybe it was just the USG or the the Amazing Comic-Cast/USG anniversary.
Because you know,
reunion. Because you know, Shelley Winters has the bill of sale to my heart.
God. This is like the fourth show in a row where this has come up again.
Again. But, you know, then you get things like before Watchmen, patently unnecessary. I would imagine it had as much clever as it had thoughtless.
Oh,
aspects. I really
think it was way more. I think the sins were way heavier than the feather on that. That's
okay. Yes, indeed. So I have yet to dare to venture into those waters, and then the ultimate slap in the face is bringing Watchmen into the DCU.
All right. I have a theory about this. I have a theory about what's happening right now.
Hail Hydra?
I believe it's innocent. Okay? And I'm going to explain why. At least to some extent innocent. I believe that we've hit a point in comics, right? Where the people that made the decision to fold, you know, the whole reason that the reboot happened was because Dr. Manhattan is the great hand of God that's manipulating everything, and that, you know, Rorschach is now in that universe, everything that's happening, right? The comedian might be a Joker, like the whole thing is because of the fact that the people in charge love Watchmen as much as we do. Probably as much as you do, Cole, but they don't get it the way that you do. And by that, I mean you don't do what you're doing, right? You don't do it. But they're like, we want to see these characters in our books. Like, we think they're great characters.
And from that standpoint, they have been left to collect dust, lo, these many years. But at the same time, I think that they still exist. They're like Big Boy and Austin Powers. They're never really gone as long, and they never really stopped bringing us amazing stories that I can read several times a year.
No, sure, but that's what I'm saying, right? Is that,
and quality meals at an affordable price. That's Big Boys.
That's whatever chain of Big Boys you have in your general vicinity. Onion rings are the best. If you haven't gotten them, if you're traveling through an area with a Big Boy, grab you some of them onion rings. They're good.
Yeah, we've lost Big Boy in this part of the country. Oh,
God, it's flags at half mast for Big Boys, because
I know.
I feel the same way about big people that lose Big Boys as I did when we lost all our Shoney's. So sad.
See, our Big Boys were Kips, but it was fun to go to other parts of the country and see the Big Boy. Like, why does Big Boy have a different name here?
Yeah, why is he Frisch's in Ohio?
Yeah, who is Shoney, and what has he done with Kip?
But no, I just think that they love the characters. They see a place for them in their universe. They found a way in their mind that it's cool to bring them in. And what they don't understand is they have become, you know, Watchmen have become Perseus, have become Horatio, have become Nemo, have become, you don't need to. They're going to exist forever. They're yours. And they're going to exist forever. They're mythology now. You don't have to bring them back.
I guess, you know, in the way that we I wish we could get Kelly on here just to address this briefly. It's like, you know, as a scholar of the classics, is she bothered by Marvel's Hercules? Of course not. So I see where you're coming from. Is, you know, as a mythology, time going forward, it's like the Greeks being pissed off at the Romans for changing all the names.
Yeah, but you know, but it would also
tough
be like
titty, it's ours now.
But it would also be like the Romans going to the Greeks and saying, "Listen, guys, we love this. We literally worship your gods. We want to incorporate them into our mythology, into our hierarchies.
Yeah. Can we make them a little more, I don't know, Romanesque to?" to coin a phrase. And they were told, absolutely, as long as you stop using the word Romanesque.
Yeah, but I don't want to dwell on the negative, because what Crisis did so well was hit a reset button in a way that allowed everyone to jump on board and understand and know, okay, Batman, I know Batman's origin story. Superman, I know Superman's origin story well enough to just pick up the book and read it. Wonder Woman, got it. And the cool thing is, and the next thing I want to move into out of Crisis is Man of Steel. Because if you can't talk, I don't feel like you can talk about Crisis as a reboot unless you talk about Man of Steel. About John
Byrne's
Man of Steel.
Very true. Because the two go hand in glove. The Crisis opened the door for Man of Steel. It allows Man of Steel to be, because you need, once you have established this new universe, then you need to find a way to make, you have to make it possible for Superman to be modernized and to kind of tweak him toward an audience. And I'm sure that the way I feel about Watchmen entering the DC universe, I'm sure there were many a Superman purist who just their heads were exploding over the audacity of, you know, this insane notion of rebooting conceptually their Superman.
But Superman by that point had been so cocked up, you know, by continuity and by being the last son of Krypton, except for your cousin and a bottle city and this dog and this cat and this horse and then five other guys and then this guy and then this other. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, absolutely. You have so many Kryptonians that you practically need a scorecard to keep up with them all. Even Superman wasn't entirely sure how many last sons of Krypton there were.
Yeah. Yes.
And daughters.
I mean, we talked about Superboy when we talked about Legion. You know, what does that do for your continuity? Like, holy shit.
Exactly.
But
it's okay. It's Superman. He was a boy.
Also, keep in mind, there wasn't a clear... This is important for nerds like Cole and I, but it's also important just for the readership. When Superman was conceptualized and brought in, guess what he couldn't do? Fly. He also didn't have laser beams that shot out of his eyes. He didn't have, you know, 80% of the power that he has now. And the powers that he did have when he started were very, very, to quote a gamer term, nerfed. They were blunted. They weren't what they are now. He wasn't flying around the Earth to turn back time, for damn sure. And by the time they got to Crisis, literally could do anything. So
yes,
there were so many different origins that had fallen to the wayside. Not necessarily origins, but kind of retcons that had fallen to the wayside about his power set and about Krypton and about, you know, the people in his world, that this was a necessary change to get people. This is the only time in my life I've been excited about Superman, and it was for six issues of a comic book.
Exactly.
And then I was done. Because they made it exciting again. They told an exciting story again.
And they gave you a reboot of the origins in such a way that it was fresh. It gave you a Krypton that wasn't, you know, you didn't want to go visit.
Right, right.
You almost didn't lament that it was so destroyed.
Sure, absolutely.
It's like, you know, you guys had it coming, basically.
But it set the stage.
You were going to be like Joker in Tim Burton's Batman. I'm glad you did.
You want to get nuts? Let's retcon Superman.
That's right.
But it also...
That's nuts.
It was a shot across the bow that if we allow things to get this jacked up, we're going to fix it come hell or high water. And they did that with Superman, and they did it well. And frankly, that, like I said, that was the only time I've ever, besides the besides the Grant Morrison JLA run that I've talked about before, besides that, it's the only time I've ever been excited about a Superman book, and it was absolutely necessary to do it. So that's why it was cool. And if you have something that's absolutely necessary that you need to get done and you need to sell to a wider audience, who do you get to tell that story? You get John Byrne to tell that damn story. Yeah. That's what you do.
That was one of those times when Byrne rose to the occasion more so than any other time in his career. And what was also wonderful about that is there were little nods to like, let's get Bizarro out of the way. Let's acknowledge Bizarro, but not, but may effectively make Bizarro a non-entity. Let's, you know, I don't think it was in Man of Steel. I think it was in, you know, at the post Man of Steel titles that you were getting things like, pay tribute to some of the silly things in a smart way. And I think that was what, granted, you left the series, or you left Superman immediately after the first dance.
I did.
But what came after was Byrne and other writers doing some clever nods at what had come before. And among those nods were things like, Titano. Who Titano was a was basically Superman's King Kong story back in the day, like probably in the 50s.
Okay.
And they basically made this a sympathetic story.
Oh, nice.
Made it kind of a tragic tale of science gone too far. And, you know, who pays that price? And one of my favorite things was, I think it was like in the pages of Action Comics or one of the myriad titles. There were four concurrent titles right there after a while. And I remembered seeing a Fred Himbeck, you know, we've talked about on the show.
Yes.
A Fred Himbeck story of it was just basically a cartoon where he was outlining all the different many faces of Jimmy Olsen.
Okay.
So it was all these different things that Jimmy Olsen had actually done in the comics, like becoming Elastic Lad
and Turtle Man.
And Turtle Boy Olsen was one of them, and they actually paid tribute to Turtle Boy Olsen.
Nice.
Which was one of the most amazingly brilliant things, where he was Jimmy was trying to get into acting.
Okay.
And, you know, it's just tough, like Peter Griffin said. You know what they say? Acting. They basically had him cast in a commercial for Titano's Pizza.
Oh, nice.
Where it was the giant guy in a gorilla suit and Jimmy Olsen in the Turtle Boy, in a leotard with the Turtle Boy pattern.
That's hilarious.
Which was a compressed hexagon pattern. And these big bug eyes. So it looked exactly like Turtle Boy Olsen.
That's hilarious. That's and they're awesome. You know,
they're duking it out for pizza supremacy over this miniature city. And another great little thing is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were insanely popular by then.
Right.
So when the Titano character knocks him over, he says, "Carla Bunka?" oh, what a wonderful little nod.
That's right. I see what you did there. So,
that's
yeah,
right.
Crisis was the granddaddy of all of the necessary reboots that for a long time before you get to Zero Hour and beyond did its job, did what it's supposed to do. Excellent work. I would like to move on to one that I've been wanting to talk about for about a year, and we just haven't had the opening to do so. And that's the reboot of Valiant Entertainment.
Yes.
I'm so
I like Valiant.
I like the Valiant. I like the current Valiant. So here's the thing, right? 92, ousted Jim Shooter, who we have told this story before during our indies issues of Hey Kids Comics, leaves Marvel and decides he's going to strike out on his own and create his own comic company called Valiant. Creates this company. It was thanks in the most part to Wizard. At that point, was very, very successful and very, very popular. Valiant was huge. Valiant had...
Wizard Magazine, in fact, helped prop up Valiant and Image tremendously.
Yes.
And to a lesser degree, Dark Horse.
Yeah, much lesser degree, Dark Horse. And, you know, Valiant had Harbinger, Exo Man of War at the time, Ray...
I was about to say, don't make me get pedantic on Harbinger.
No, I brought it around. Don't worry. and Shadow Man back then. Then they had Archer and Armstrong. They had the Eternal Warrior. You know, they had all of these things back then. But then they kind of fell off, only to be reborn around 2012. Now that's what I want to talk about. So in 2012, they relaunched everything. They rebooted the entire Valiant universe, stem to stern, using the whole animal Valiant universe. And I'm telling you right now, it's amazing. The things that they've done were outstanding. They launched it with Exo, and Exo Manowar is such a cool comic now. Like, I read it before and I was like, all right, you know, but now it's just so damn cool because you have that, I forget what nationality or what ancient nationality, Eric is, but Eric gets abducted by aliens, finds the Exo suit, and then like just goes on a berserk. It's like if Iron Man lost, you know, was if Iron Man was Gilgamesh, what would he do? It's very cool. They also had Harbinger, which was Harbinger. God, I'll get it. Which is basically the...
Well, you're thinking of the drink, the Harbinger Wallbanger.
I am thinking of the Harbinger Wallbanger. Yes.
Yes, it
is. There's a... the only way to have it is with... you've heard of Grey Goose vodka? And the only way to have that is with Albatross vodka.
Absolutely. Because it just kind of hangs around your neck forever.
That's right. The hangover is the worst. Bloodshot and Archer and Armstrong were in there. Great. Fantastic books. If you can get your hands on them, please do. Archer and Armstrong is one of the coolest books that I think I've read in a long time. These books are enjoyable. They're just superhero fun. They aren't too overladen with any kind of continuity, which is what you get after a good reboot. Then they go on to make this giant Unity crossover. Bloodshot was Dwayne Straczynski, which is huge. That's a huge get anyway. Straczynski and I have had our differences in the past, but I'm going to give him a pass on this one. Do you want me to tell you what their can I just at least touch on the cash grab that they had?
Oh, please do, because that immediately sprung to mind.
Do you remember this? Because the thing is, at this time, now I want to hit this before I go into that, okay? Just real quick. They won, God, what was it? They were the most nominated in 2014 Harvey Awards. They've won how many friggin' awards? There was every year they were the most nominated. Diamond gave them what year was it? 2013, 2014? Best publisher under 5%. Just so many like accolades. The most nominated title was Bloodshot. I'm trying to find. I had a list of all of the accolades. Yes. In 2016, Valiant was nominated for 50 Harvey Awards.
Good Lord.
Yeah, most nominated for any publisher, including 8 for Bloodshot Reborn, which is insane. We're talking about an independent comic company, under 5%. That's huge. That is huge. Now I have to go back through my notes and find the thing I wanted. Oh, there it is. oh, Jesus. So, Cole, are you familiar with the talking cover?
So now I can't say that I'm familiar with the talking comic, you say?
The talking comic? Yeah. So it's the talking comic book cover. So they would put...
Not to be confused with the talking comic.
They would put these QR codes on their comic books. And when you clicked the QR code, when you scanned it with your phone, it would take an image of your, it would show you the cover of the comic book, except the mouth of the character on the comic would move.
Oh my! You mean like Clutch Cargo style?
Like it was like not quite as bad as Clutch Cargo, I'm sure, but it would, you know, because it's an AR. Because it's augmented reality, the animation would move and give you a brief synopsis of what you could expect from buying this comic book, which is the cash grab at another level.
Just, yes, indeed.
Just a whole different level of cash grab there, guys. That was great. But the thing is, they took a bunch of convoluted characters that... they tried really hard to make sense together, Ninjak and Bloodshot, and they made them cool. And they brought in indie writers to take control of these books and really tell some pretty amazing stories, Shadow Man, and tell some pretty amazing stories, build them all into their own universe, and just tell straight ahead comic, you know, superhero or you know, fantastic
genre stories,
and it was great. I can't encourage you enough to read Valiant. They've really taken things to another level, and they relaunched Quantum and Woody, was I think one of their the last relaunches from the old Valiant universe to the new Valiant universe. And I'll always have a special place in my heart for Quantum and Woody. I think it's a great concept, an awesome, hilarious book, and they've done it justice. So good on them for that. I goes without mentioning that this is something that everybody should read. It's not one of the big two, so you don't think a lot about, oh, the rebooting of, you know, an entire independent comic book label.
Exactly.
But Harvey don't lie, and 50 nominations is pretty solid. So so that's out there. I just wanted to make sure you knew that. Now, you know, as we're always running a little short on time,
naturally,
I wanted to pass this on to Cole for what will probably be our last one before we start talking about wrapping it up. And that would be, Cole, would you like to take this one?
Absolutely. Are we going to be exploring the all new X-Men?
No. I think more important than that is that we talk about the relaunch, rebranding of the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, in fact, that's an interesting classification as a reboot, because this is the only reboot that came out of absolute technical necessity.
Right.
Because Dark Horse bought the rights from Lucasfilm to publish Star Wars comics. They didn't buy the rights from Marvel to everything Marvel had created over their 9-year, nearly 10-year run, years and years earlier. So it's an interesting thing, because it brought Star Wars back into comics. I think you had mentioned a just dreadful 3-issue 3D.
Yeah,
Blackthorn Comics had done a 3D Star Wars, which was just god awful.
Yes, I did.
In every respect, it's like, what a waste of your licensing money. But I think that Blackthorn published during that, there was a period where nobody was buying the Star Wars license.
It's hard to imagine that now. It's really hard to imagine that now.
Yeah, and it was a period where things like, there was still a lot of merchandise being made, but wasn't the big high-profile mainstream merchandise. It never really went away. It just faded little by little and would have faded completely, but for a lot of things. So Dark Horse comes along, and they start out by doing, I think was there, if I remember correctly, they kind of did a big splash initially by just sort of creating a new tale with Star Wars Dark Empire. That was sort of yes. where they jumped in. And then it was all just a slew of miniseries, Rogue One and Rogue One 2.
So good.
You know, different little vignettes and anthologies and things like that. Then they go in full bore, full steam ahead. We're going to publish a Star Wars continuing series.
Right.
So, you know, they purchased the rights to publish a comic book in 1991, which, let's see, DC, or Marvel ended their run in the 80s. So it was a good decade between anybody publishing a Star Wars comic. And between all of the slew of miniseries or even ongoing series, because then they just started going nuts with titles. They realized they have this entire niche that they've carved out in their publishing empire that, you know, why limit yourself like Marvel did to a single title?
Right.
So you started having things like, what were they, like the Old Republic. Let's yes. tell tales that took place before the Star Wars saga. Let's tell tales that take place during the Star Wars saga. Let's tell tales. Lucasfilm just pretty much let them off the leash.
Right.
And because no one really knew, other than episodes 1 through 3, you could go far enough back in time with the Old Republic not to step on those toes.
Correct.
And forward in time, this was still during the George Lucas denial period, where there never was an episode 7 through 9. No, that was never in the works, despite what I said all the time back in the 70s and 80s.
We're not bitter. Nobody's bitter. You're bitter.
I think you're being bitter by saying I'm bitter. You're the one being just...
You're it's you and your face, your dumb face.
So... It was kind of open season, and then they could do all kinds of just anything. I believe there was even one of the Rogue One series, if I'm not mistaken, even went so far as to bring an Ewok into the X-Wing squadrons.
I believe so. It was all bets are off for a while there.
Yeah. And, you know, like anything like that, you had some great stuff. You had some questionable stuff. I mean, the Marvel Star Wars have a place in my heart, but... A lot of it was silly.
Yeah, the Jacks and the...
Some of it was stupid. And toward the end, I just stopped reading, but I never stopped buying.
Oh, no.
Subscription wound up... I think I got X-Men or something to finish out my subscription because they hauled off and canceled my book on me.
Oh.
That may be where I got into X-Men in the first place. Like, well, I don't know. What do I want?
Might as well.
Yeah, I'm stuck with it. So it was interesting because it does represent a kind of reboot because Dark Horse had to start over from scratch. And for a while, they kind of avoided doing a full-scale ongoing title because that's such a huge playground. And perhaps they, because they were publishing, reprinting the old Marvel stuff as well as the comic strip stuff from the daily newspaper strips.
Yeah.
That later, I forget who, Howie Post or something like that was the artist on the early one. And then later, Al Williamson took over with his amazing, hyper-realistic representations of anything that was on screen and rocket ships and mushrooms if it wasn't. And Williamson fans will know one of the defining qualities of Williamson, much like Gil Kane with noses, is... Rocket ships and mushrooms.
Rocket ships and the Lefeld.
Yeah, Al Williams story. Yeah, like Lefeld with hoof feet. You know, there's always somebody who has a signature move, as it were. But, you know, maybe they didn't want to tread into those dangerous waters where you might just start getting silly or stupid. But for the most part, they brought it. They created a lot of iconic characters, much like what was going on in the ongoing novels and other media, including video games, where you have these iconic characters that then were instantly lamented in mass. It was like a million voices cried out in silence because they had the internet to bitch about it all the time. And, you know, in many ways, that led to yet another reboot because the Dark Horse license lapses and Disney, now owning Lucasfilm, owning Marvel, they're like, okay, if we're going to publish, why not just make all the money?
Right, yeah. Well, the thing that always got me about Dark Horse is they started releasing – now, correct me if I'm wrong because you're going to know more than I do about this. But didn't they release comics that happened directly after Jedi? Because they couldn't touch any of the – they couldn't touch New Hope. They couldn't touch Empire, and they couldn't touch Jedi. But didn't they release a series like – of? I think, what was it called? God, I can't think of it, but it was
basically... Well, the original Dark Empire is just like almost immediately, because you've got like clone emperors coming in and Luke taking out an AT-AT with the Force, which, like, you know, would have helped if you did that on Hoth ass.
Where were you for that one, jackass?
Yeah, he was just barely moving a lightsaber in a moment of personal desperation.
No,
but it was also what was cool visually with Dark Empire in that particular scene was that it was somebody finally giving you a glimpse at kind of what Vader was saying with the ability to destroy a planet is insignificant compared to the power of the Force. It's like, yeah, well, why don't you show me something?
I see a lot of talky-talky and not a lot of dewy-dewy. It was always important for me because of the fact that it was an absolute true reboot by necessity, and you had to do it with one arm tied behind your back. So
yeah,
I thought that was a really cool one.
Well, Lucasfilm, especially in the 70s and 80s, was apparently just dreadful to work under.
I can only imagine.
It's being able to create anything. You know, I'm amazed what they did produce, considering how much the people who were holding the reins would rein in, and how hamstrung they were between films. And I think to a lesser degree, Dark Horse was also hamstrung in many ways. But they started telling a lot of tales that worked within the Star Wars universe, that felt like Star Wars tales, that looked like – you've got artists who understood – what that universe looked like. They didn't try to recreate it in their image.
Well, and what we found out when they announced that they were going to be making The Force Awakens, and when they announced that there were going to be new Star Wars comic books coming from Marvel Disney, and they announced that all of the expanded universe, with few exceptions, was going to be wiped off the map, what we found very quickly was that there was a very passionate fan base behind what Dark Horse had done.
Yes, they had created a lot of iconic characters. You know, we know, like Grand Admiral Thrawn, who comes from the Timothy Zahn novels, who would then, of course, be brought into a lot of other media. But, you know, there are a lot of iconic characters that came from the comics, and like Talon Card and...
Guess who else came in the comics? Princess Xizor!
Oh!
Yeah.
Well, Xizor... You can't blame comics for Xizor. Xizor came out of a novel and a comic and...
And a toy line and a...
Yeah, everything else.
This whole episode was a setup for Prince Xizor.
Oh, you had to bring it.
This is the Tuvok of this episode. I'm going to Prince Xizor you to death.
I need more green for Xizor.
I need more green for Xizor's face.
Face Xizor's face, my face.
It's pronounced Xizor.
Who knew?
Who knew? Such a good movie. If you haven't seen Free Enterprise, watch it. But yeah, like, that's the thing is, out of necessity, they created this world with one arm tied behind their back because they had the evil overlord watching every move they made, and still managed to create these beloved stories and characters out of it. And I thought that was pretty amazing that they could do that. It's also a glowing endorsement or an indictment of Star Wars fans like Cole and I that we're willing to accept just about anything that's labeled Star Wars and say, all right, I can get behind that. Like, all right, I'm good. I have a Rogue Squadron one half from Wizard Magazine somewhere around here.
Oh, wow. The Wizard Magazine one halves.
We should talk about those at some point, too. Maybe in the cash grab we'll talk about the one halves. Oh, the other thing that Valiant did that I forgot to bring up was...
We should talk about them halfway through.
Oh, my God. We should...
That issue.
The other thing that Valiant did that I forgot to bring up, which was, you know, super inventive, was they introduced the kind of first zero-issue comics for the origins of their characters.
Oh, yes.
So they didn't have a... They didn't have to shoehorn in the origin of their characters in the first and second and third and fourth issues.
That's
they
right.
Their own. Yeah.
So if you really had to know.
We'll let you buy this one out of continuity so that you can find out what happened. Oh, man. There's a couple more I want to talk about before we kick off of here and kick this old can down the road, as it were. And one of those was... So this one is a bit of a sticker-sins point for us comic book fans, but I think it was good. I think it did well, and it did what it intended to do, because it's less a hard reboot than it is a side boot that was allowed to happen and kind of drew a blueprint for what you can do if you do it correctly. And that was Marvel's Ultimate Universe. Because what Marvel's Ultimate Universe did was say, okay, we're going to reboot the Marvel Universe, but guess what we're going to do? We're going to leave the Marvel Universe alone. Have it. It's over there. Run with it. But over here, we're going to restart from scratch and tell a whole different Marvel Universe. We're going to rebuild everything for you. If you want to read that, that's great. If you want to read the original, that's great. And never,
exactly.
Never the twain shall meet up to a point.
Up to the point where they meet.
It's always up to a point, but up to the point at which they meet. And they still haven't really met that hard. The only real big crossover that happened was Miles Morales' Spider-Man. That was it, really. Everything else was...
There was an FF and FF... like the big F and FF thing going on at one point.
There was a big F and FF thing, but that makes complete sense since they were always, you know, universe to universe.
Oh, yeah. They were constantly. She had that great cover of the two Reed Richards eye there.
But that was, for me, that was a really cool way to reboot an entire universe without screwing up the original, was just do them both. Why not? You know, if you want to have this gritty... more geared towards, you know, the 2000s Marvel Universe, great, have it. It's over here. Mark Millar's going to do it. He's going to do what he does over here. Go ahead and read it. We'll launch those books. Have fun. Enjoy yourselves. Bendis will run at it. You know, they're good books. But we're not going to take away from Spider-Man or Thor or Iron Man that you know and love. We're just going to give you different versions over here. They're fully vetted. They're fully actualized. They're real. This isn't Elseworlds. You know, this is a real thing that's happening, but it's also happening over here, too, if you want to stick with this. And I think that's a great model. That's why I wanted to bring it up.
Absolutely. No, that is because it, you know, rather than – it was painfully obvious that the Ultimates was meant to be, you know, reach a different younger audience or create new audiences, different dynamic, what have you. But they did that rather than just, well, sorry, old folks, you had your chance. Here's the universe, the Marvel Universe, redone for the younger set. And so, yeah, like you said, you could have either or both. You know, if you want the prediction of Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury. You've got it if you want.
Absolutely true.
If you got to have your traditional all-American white boy, you got him still as well. He's like 100 now.
God, he's more than 100. He was like 140 or something.
Yeah, it's insane. I think he was close to 100 when it was Howling Commandos.
Right. So do you have any other ones you wanted to talk about? Cause...
Well, I think that I did want to sort of touch on the idea of what was that one where like they I don't know if it was a complete reboot or it was just sort of like one of these event things, like, you know, this event means now we have, 300 mutants or something like that in the entire world instead of an endless number, and until we start realizing that whatever number we settled on was not damn near enough. And now we're hurting for mutants and we need some more mutants, so we start basically creating twice as many as we killed off. I forget what that couched.
It was House of M. It was Scarlet Witch killed all the mutants.
Okay.
Yeah, except for like at the first point it was like 8. Here are 8 mutants. It's like, what? That's crazy. Okay. Like that was it.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Oh man, yeah, that was a dumb reboot.
Yeah, it was just, you know, and it was one of those things where, you know, we need to clean house and we got too damn many mutants. We've got, you know, Violet Beauregard man who can turn purple. And...
Violet Beauregard man. That's a good one.
You know, can inflate and turn purple and do nothing. You know, it's just a ridiculous notion to. There are other better ways to clean house, or simply ignore the characters, you know, just because they're there doesn't mean we have to use them. Watchmen.
Well, you were talking off mic before we started about one that I know, you know, we've talked about some really good ones and necessary. And I think that we did that, you know, a service, but you had mentioned one that I think that absolutely needs to be talked about before we kick off of here. And that was Spider-Man. I'm not gonna let it go. What, one day more, right? Is that the one? No, one more day.
One more day. Yeah,
we got again, it messed up before.
So yeah, Spider-Man One Day More was the Victor Hugo musical.
Oh shit! Yeah, so God, it's been so long since I've read it, and I've blocked it out of my memory. But if memory serves,
One Day More,
Aunt May,
your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man is on the block, fighting Green Goblin, Shocker, and Doc Ock.
That's good. That was good. That was good.
With apologies to all fans of Broadway, including yourself. I mean that.
Yeah, it hurts, but it was good. I'm going to give it to you. Like you went with it. You leaned into it. That was the important. Yeah. If you're going to go for it, fucking go for it. The idea was that if you don't know what this is, and I feel like if I tell you what it is now, I'm doing you a disservice. It's a reverse spoiler. I'm doing you a disservice by the sheer knowledge that this exists. It's Lovecraftian. As soon as you read it, you're damned. Aunt May is dying or has died. I forget which it is at the beginning, but Spider-Man makes a deal with the literal devil, Mephisto, to...
A.K.A. Marvel Satan.
Marvel Devil, yeah. Yeah, one of the...
Everything has to be Marvels.
It's one of the Marvel's Dukes of Hell. To give up everything in his life to get her back. So that means his wife, that means his life, that means his job, that means his current, like, career path. Give it all up to get her back.
His Avengers priority identicard.
Right. Now, here's the rub. How old is Aunt May at the point at which this is happening?
Yeah, I mean, if Aunt May were, like, I don't know, cinematic universe hot babe Aunt May...
If it was Marissa Tomei, hot babe.
Yeah, that would be a different story.
Wow.
But, I mean, you know, he can bring her back, but how much more time you gonna get? 16 weeks?
Right. Right. She gonna make it to Thanksgiving, pal? So you're willing to...
Yeah, Jesus. What a... You know, it's like a... There's no real offer on the table.
Yet he takes it.
Yeah. And I think it... In many ways, that sort of harkened... There was an article, I think, in Amazing Heroes... 30 some odd years ago, titled Aunt May Must Die. And, you know, 30 something years ago, Aunt May was 100.
Right.
And ought to be dead. And, you know, now you have, you know, she's still around. And you had to hang this curious offer on the most tenuous. I mean, you know...
Yeah, this indecent proposal, Woody Harrelson, sleep with my wife.
Yeah, you know, Georgian anti-hero Johnny, at least, you know, it may have been a sin, but he was able to wager his impressive fiddle skills against Satan. But, you know, the payoff... was a shiny fiddle made of gold.
That's a pretty big, that's a better payoff.
Which I hope that Johnny had the good sense to either put in a safe deposit box or at least display, because a solid gold fiddle, that's not good material to build musical instruments out of.
It really, the resonance
gold
sucks.
Gold is not very acoustic at all.
Yeah, the resonance sucks.
Most of your soft metals just...
I got soft metal.
I know you do.
Oh, man. I feel like we should probably get out of here on that, because I don't feel like I can go on. Like, this is a Titanic moment for me. I had been trying to forget that book every time it comes up, and then I try to forget it again, because it's awful. It's...
Yeah, and the only reason it even needed to be brought up here was just to address the fact that it was... You know, we've talked about the good and the bad, and this is the just terrible... in reboots. And I think, did the effect of it just completely go away, or...
Oh, it got retconned out again real quick.
Yeah.
Like it happened super fast. But it's just, it's an example of, and it, you know, we wanted to get rid of, I believe we wanted to get rid of some lasting effects from prior events. And
yeah.
This is the way that they decided to do that, was by...
Well, they're couching it in entirely the wrong kind of story. There are 100 ways that could have been done, and done better.
Oh, it could have absolutely been done better. I still don't understand. See, here's the thing, right? Spider-Man gave up his identity during Civil War. That's what spawned... On the Marvel side of mistakes were made, Spider-Man gave up his identity in the Civil War. We need to get rid of that from the collective zeitgeist. You know, the paradigm needs to be wiped clean, like so many bear anuses in the woods. How do we do that? Well, let's have him make a deal with the devil, but how do we do that? Aunt May. Aunt May, she got shot. Let's throw Mephisto at him. We can just wipe it all away, like Civil War never happened.
Hey, Mephisto, here's an idea. How about offer to return Uncle Ben?
That's a good one. That is a good one. Oh, that's good. All right.
Because that I can get behind.
All right, that's a good one. That, I think that's a good put a pin in it right there. All right, so reboots. Cole, better or worse, good or bad, what's your final thoughts?
It really comes down to, was this editorial mandate, because by and large, all of these are born from editorial mandate.
Right.
Is the editorial mandate well thought out, or is it just a cash grab or a lazy way around something? They can be amazing. They can be thought-provoking. They can be worthwhile. Or they can be absolutely pointless. And sadly, most of them turn out to be the latter.
Right, right. It takes a very special reboot to really stand the test of time. It takes a crisis. It takes a Valiant. It takes a Star Wars by Dark Horse to really kind of become mythology in its own right instead of rewriting mythology. And it has to be done with the best intentions. It can't be done for cash. It can't be done because you made a mistake. It has to be done with the best intentions or it's going to fail.
And it has to have a good, solid, necessary underlying reason or have a direction once you get on the other side.
Right.
And more often than not, they have no idea where they're headed. They just want a grandstand.
Yep. All right. Why don't we get up out of here? You can plug us up. We'll get up out of here. I want to thank everybody again for listening. It's been a long run. I'm glad we didn't reboot because we didn't have good enough reason to do it. We've got a real solid foundation. But that being said, I want to say this at the end of the show. While we didn't reboot, what you're going to see is an evolution over the next 250 issues of this show. We're going to start incorporating more video. I now have the technology to do so.
Yes, indeed.
I've spent some time getting that together. So if all goes well, and you're listening to this on Friday, Sunday we should have – check your Twitter feeds and your Instagram feeds from the Jedi Cole universe, because we should have sometime in the late afternoon, evening, our first ever live Jedi Cole video.
Yes, indeed. We will be producing a live version. The first time this show has gone live in a great many years.
Right. So if all goes well, and again, don't hold me to this because technology being what it is, we're still working out some kinks, but it should be at least the Jedi Cole, myself, and Eddie Medina talking about all kinds of various spookersons and weirdness and awesome stuff out there.
We're going to go kind of all in for Halloween this year because we're going to have that, and we're going to have on the 31st our now – what will become now annual, because this will be our second one, Halloween special.
That's right. I'm excited for that one. You picked a really good topic this year for Halloween. All I can keep thinking, and I don't want to give away the topic. All I can keep thinking in my head is like how hard it is for the Blue Devil to go to work every day.
Well, especially you know if you change vocations.
Yeah, because currently he's like a stuntman, so maybe you can get away with it. But the problem is if you're like, oh, Daniel Craig, get out of that car. Blue Devil, get in it. You've got to be Daniel Craig.
That's
going to be a problem.
It's hard to get stunt work.
It's hard to get it's good work if you can get it. Okay, so where can they find all of this wonderful gloriousness?
Yes, indeed. We are coming to you from the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com. You can check out the tweets on Twitter,
at
the Jedi Cole U. And check out the – we got a Hey Kids Comics Facebook page. I'm trying to start doing some stuff with that. There's a Jedi Cole Universe Facebook page now. There's also Instagram? We got some
Yes.
Hey Kids Comics Instagram going on nowadays.
We do. HK Comics Show on Instagram and on Twitter. So you can find us both ways there.
And you can also find myself and the aforementioned Eddie Medina on the Rancor Pit Live on DallasOnAir.com on the first and third Sundays of every month from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central. On that third Sunday of each month, my brand new show, which is now only 3 months in, new monthly, Isle of Toys, A-I-S-L-E, Isle of Toys, where I challenge myself to go into a lot of the history and discussions with collectors and aficionados about all manner of toys over the course of this show. I'm going to be delving into some toys I have no personal interest in, but I think they're all very important, and I love toys.
You really do. You do.
I do.
Oh, man. Yeah, so...
I believe my November show will be, Do You Like the Star Wars? We're going to cross over straight from Mild Toys right into the Galaxy at Play, which will be our toy episode. We're probably going to talk a lot about toys and also kind of hint at some of our Christmas wish list.
Oh, shit. That's so good. Man. Oh, all right. All right, so we're going to get out of here. Just remember, buy, collect, enjoy your comics. Check out, if you haven't checked out Crisis on Infinite Earths yet, please check it out. It stands up. It holds up, what, 40 years later now, Cole?
Easily 40 years now, which means that DC in our lifetime will turn 100.
Holy shit. It's going to be older than Aunt May by the time it's done.
Yes, indeed.
It'll make a deal with the devil to go back in time and get rid of its marriage to Warner Brothers Pictures, hopefully. All right, on that note.
Oh, if only.
All right, say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics.